Hello, today is Thursday, March 8th, 2018. I'm Joe Schmidt with TC2, and this is Staying Connected. On today's podcast, we're going to explain the Cisco Enterprise Agreements and how enterprises could realize long-term benefits and savings by scrutinizing their Cisco EAs. I'm joined by Ben Fox, one of TC2's Managing Directors, and Mark Lindsay, a senior partner at LB3. And Mark is also president of Avenue 4, which is a leading IP4 advisory firm. Mark, let's begin with you. Can you briefly describe Cisco's EA propositions and what it offers for an enterprise?
Yes, thanks, Joe. The general idea of Cisco EAs and EAs generally is that rather than buying unit-by-unit software and associated maintenance, the customers can pay one upfront fee and acquire enough licenses and maintenance for the entire organization, subject to certain growth constraints. There are, for Cisco, there are certain suites and software that are made available on an EA license basis. Not all of their support services are made available that way, but some of their security suites and collaboration suites, increasingly software-based solutions, are made available to customers as an option on an EA basis. And EA unit pricing, like how much do you pay for the enterprise bundle, is typically a roll-up of some metered units, like authorized users. And authorized users can be the number of employees or some other count, or the covered devices. If it's a security service, security software, it might be the number of devices that are covered by the solution. Depending on the suite, depending on the offering, there could be other metered units to set the pricing up front. The benefit, you know, some ask, why would I, you know, pay a lump sum upfront amount as opposed to rolling in unit by unit when I need it? And the objective, if you do this correctly, is that the upfront fee you pay for the entire suite of services to cover the enterprise or the business unit issue, that upfront fee, when you factor in reasonable growth over the time period of the term, should be competitively priced when you look at it a unit-by-unit basis. So on net, you should pay less for the same consumption of software and support services if you buy it on an EA basis than if you bought it unit-by-unit. There's also some procurement simplicity because you don't have to do a SKU for each time you add something. Why would Cisco choose to have a value proposition that reduces their revenue? Well, one of the really good things for Cisco is that typically customers are purchasing EA based on some forecasts of how much they'll use over the term, and then they pay that all upfront. So 2 years, 3 years, EA license and support would be a 3-year upfront lump sum payment, which is a big revenue hit in the year that Cisco signs it. So they get to book that revenue fairly early, right away, for a fairly large purchase and not have to resell support or resell licenses every year and do detailed audits in order to kind of continue to grow that revenue on a unit-by-unit basis.
All I would add to what Mark just said in the introduction there is Cisco targets its EA propositions quite specifically. It targets them on Cisco One software, its collaboration software products, and its security software products. And the final thing that's really important to note is that these enterprise agreements, they're for the software. They really do not cover the sale or the support of hardware products. And so from a support perspective, SmartNet maintenance is not covered in these EAs, just the software maintenance. So software maintenance products such as SWISS, SWSS.
So Ben, what are some of the key steps that an enterprise needs to take in order to achieve some of these benefits and savings with their Cisco EA?
Yes, so of course the first step is to make sure that the EA is priced an appropriate discount compared to, as Mark was describing, if you purchase the covered software and the covered support on a unit-by-unit basis. You know, what are you getting in terms of a lower price in return for paying for everything up front? So our advice on that is to ask Cisco to demonstrate to you that the upfront fee that you pay is lower than the cost of purchasing the covered software and support at your agreed Cisco discounts. And of course, it's important to note you're only getting a good deal on the EA if you're actually starting with competitive Cisco discounts in the first place, and thus making that comparison based on a competitive market proposition. Second key point is you need to size the enterprise agreement correctly. Rather being everything you can eat, the current iterations of EAs from Cisco cover a very specific projected quantity of software units and support units that you would consume over the term of the EA with a built-in allowance of 20% growth before Cisco would start to charge you additional fees. So it's important that when you're determining how many users, how many devices are going to be covered by the EA, that you strike a sensible balance between making sure that the enterprise agreement isn't oversized, which simply means that you'd pay for units that you'll never consume, but also making sure it's not undersized, which would then introduce a risk of exceeding the 20% growth allowance and give rise to you incurring additional payments, unless, of course, you intentionally design it that way. It's also really important as you contemplate the value proposition of an EA to understand the rate at which you expect to use the covered products. So Cisco normally will present the value proposition assuming that you're going to consume all of those software licenses, software products from day one. But in practice, what really happens is you ramp up your usage over time as you deploy those software products, those licenses throughout your enterprise. Hence, there becomes this lost value, if you will, from the enterprise agreement at the start of the term for software maintenance and subscriptions during that period that you ramp up. You're not using, you're allowed to consume 100% of the allowance from day one, but your actual usage ramps up over time. So you need to consider that as you contemplate whether or not the price for the EA is a good deal, again, compared to just buying on a unit-by-unit basis.
All right, so Mark, what are some of the commercial parameters that enterprises need to work through when they negotiate an EA?
Well, one of the things that Ben was mentioning as sort of key to sizing this correctly is the growth allowance. You're allowed to grow whatever your metered usage is from the baseline set that's at your pricing. Typically, an EA contract for Cisco, you can grow up to 20%. And so long as you're within that bandwidth, no incremental fees are due, typically. But once you surpass that incremental fee, so the key is, how do you account for utilization within that 20% growth limit? And in a case where you're measuring your entire EA bundle by end user, you can typically count the number of end users in a category of end users, so that it seems pretty straightforward, but it gets more complicated. Frequently or occasionally, Cisco may take the approach of saying, well, it's not an entire 20% growth cap across the entire EA suites for the EA at issue. It is a per suite cap or a per line item cap even. So understanding when they say there's a 20% growth cap, really digging in and making sure the contract documents are clear on how they are counting up to that 20%. Now, even the case of end users can be somewhat nuanced. Many organizations now just don't have employees. They have contractors. They have staff augmentation resources. They have project personnel that flex in and out based on seasonal activity. And for EA pricing purposes, it's not always the number of people who actually use the software. It is oftentimes calculated based on population that could use the software. So being very mindful about not including transient personnel or certain personnel that really shouldn't give rise to sustained usage, including them in your original count, and make sure they're not included in your count for the growth perspective as well. So being very careful about which employees, which personnel are actually attributable to you when you have to then true up the consumption for the EA unit pricing is, again, critical to stay within the price boundary of your initial purchase.
So an additional concept that's really important, again related to the growth allowance, is agreeing to what the charges would be should you exceed your growth allowance. So the charge for an enterprise agreement, they tend to be rather opaque. They're typically just one big large number. There's no unit pricing as such. So therefore, it doesn't tend to be readily clear what the unit charges would be if you exceed that 20% growth allowance. So it's really important that to agree with Cisco or indeed your value-added reseller on what those incremental unit charges would be should you exceed the growth allowance, and of course document them in the contract. And also make sure that the EA, the T's and C's, you're happy with the process and how it's documented for the measurement of the growth allowance and what happens, the true up, the true forward process, which is typically done annually and is typically only go forward with Cisco, which is a really good thing. But also look at what constitutes using units that are covered by the EA. So, for example, what constitutes using a license? Merely accessing a license in the Cisco portal, but not applying that license to a device or using it as such, making it an actively used license, shouldn't necessarily constitute consuming that license. So being quite careful and precise in defining, right, what triggers Cisco to count a license or a user as being used and therefore consuming the volume of units covered under your EA. So that's really important to make sure you don't exceed your usage allowance without even meaning to.
Well, the other thing I'll add is, in order to not have the value sapped away from your EA purchase, is that Cisco, can you imagine if there's a 3-year EA term, and in most software-based products, there's material changes to the software, oftentimes enhancements, but not always. Sometimes things are materially changed and features are removed. So, you know, when you're making this commitment up front for a three-year software term and your payment isn't directly tied to the ongoing utilization of the functionality that you thought you bought, really getting clarity on what rights you might have if that software does change over the course of the term and no longer is fit for the intended purpose that you bought it for. Functionality goes away. Enhanced functionality becomes dependent on acquisition of software that's not in your bundle. All those kind of material changes to the baseline software that was a part of your initial demand set for the EA, if there are any changes in that, you as a customer ought to have some remedies to recoup, prorate, reduce the financial exposure that you signed up for when that particular package of software is no longer available due to actions on Cisco's part. You know, taking things end of life by way of example. So having clear rights to reset your financial obligations based on the actual software and support services that are made available through Cisco through the term of the EA is one of those remedies that you have to negotiate.
So I have one final item, Joe, which is something that we always say when you're negotiating a deal, and that's that it's really important to contemplate what happens at the end of the contract, so in this case the end of the term of the EA, at the start when you're actually negotiating with the supplier. So understanding what happens when your EA expires becomes very fundamental. Moving back to simply purchasing the licenses, the software, the support services on a unit-by-unit basis, one may be difficult because you've been used to just having one big bill you've paid for up front. It may be commercially unpalatable as well at the end of the enterprise agreement. But if you haven't negotiated a price for extending the enterprise agreement, you may find it difficult when you get to the end because you'll have very limited leverage to agree an extension, an agreeable price and on agreeable terms. So negotiating those extension rights, including the price for such extensions, should be agreed at the start of the process when you're first entering into your enterprise agreement, which is, of course, when you have the most negotiation leverage to get a good deal.
All right. So, all right, Mark, you're the lawyer. So based on everything I've just heard, I'm going to assume that the EA contracting process isn't quite as straightforward as one might expect. Is that correct?
That is a fair observation and an accurate one. Part of it, you know, the Cisco EA has been around for a while, but it is evolving a bit as more and more customers face it and negotiate it, and as more advised intermediaries like T2 and LB3 help shape that outcome. But the contracts, as you can imagine, it says Enterprise Agreement EA stands for Enterprise Agreement, and inherently that means simple. But for Cisco, nothing is quite that simple. Typically, Cisco doesn't engage directly with end customers. So one, you have to go through a VAR, and going through VARs always add complexity. It's also not a single contract document. It's not like there's an enterprise agreement that lays out in 20 concise pages on all four corners all the T's and C's that you have to worry about. So, one, how do you get through the wall of the VAR contract negotiation? In our experience, it's essential to have Cisco involved in those negotiations fairly early in the process to get any success in customizing, revising these terms to meet the commercials and legal issues we're talking about. So, one, you got to have Cisco involved and aware of the negotiation and not have the VAR be your go-between on essential commercial terms. And then you add to the actual mechanics of the contract itself. You've got some contract with the VAR that is the enabling document on how you order and get it fulfilled. But there's a multiple additional layers that you'll have to sort of penetrate through to understand the full scope of your deal. There are the EA program terms, which are frequently the place where all these commercial concepts we've been talking about today are housed. And once you get through those, you have your core business deal worked out. But then there are additional end-user license terms, acceptable use terms, end-of-life policies, omnibus umbrella terms, all these additional layers that are frequently embedded URL documents in other documents. So you have to keep digging, keep digging, keep digging through each layer to make sure that none of these layers defeat the value that you negotiated in the overriding EA program terms and don't undercut the important principles and remedies we're talking about here today. Because they most certainly will, as a default. They're oftentimes inconsistent. They oftentimes pull back substantive rights that you may have thought by assumption were in your overarching master agreement. So none of these layers can be ignored by a customer who wants to get the right deal for them. Now, one of the things that is a particular area of concern when you're doing deals with a Cisco and an EA in this fashion with the upfront commitment is things go wrong during the course of a three-year term. Now, we talked about the end-of-life issue, but features and functions of the software could just fail for their purpose. They may not work. Now, you'd be surprised that on a default basis, a lot of these EA software suites from Cisco don't provide a service description of the functionality. So you're going to be hard-pressed a year and a half into the deal to say, wait a minute, I saw a description product A that provided this functionality. That functionality isn't performing as I anticipated. I can't use it anymore. I should get my money back. That's not going to happen if you can't point to a specific specification or service description upon which you can rely on to say, here's how the software is supposed to work. It's fundamental in software licensing, but it can get lost in this morass of contract layering. You must have a description of the specifications that you're buying in order to have a remedy that the software and support are not meeting those specifications. And once you get that in, once you have a framework that says, I've got features and functions described, I've got service levels described for support services, I've got that described somewhere. Then the additional step you have to then take is, well, what happens if the software does fail? What can I do if the software fails to meet those specifications in a scenario where I'm paying up front and I can't have the benefit of withholding payment for non-functioning software support in the future? That's a tricky bit, and it's unlikely you're going to address all of that risk in a deal with Cisco, particularly because you pay that money up front. It's been paid to a VAR. That VAR then has paid some portion of the Cisco. You've got multiple insulation points from extracting a financial remedy from Cisco for failed software. But it's important that you press on to have some manner to recoup pro rata a portion of credits and refunds when the software does not meet the specification and it does fail. That's probably one of the more challenging aspects of negotiating with Cisco on its EA. It runs contrary to the way most software deals and support services work, but you then have to press forward and make sure that you do have that fundamental right at any point in time in the term where the software fails, that you can get that economic remedy.
So, Ben, do you have anything else to add?
I would just close, Joe, I think, by saying that Cisco EAs, they're a good opportunity and they're a good value proposition for customers. They should drive lower costs for the customer and they should provide purchasing flexibility and certainly simplicity. But as is always true with any new way of suppliers selling their services and products, Cisco EAs have an evolving and a complex deal structure that it's really important to carefully analyze, to carefully negotiate, and indeed to carefully document in your contract just to make sure that the cost savings and that purchasing simplicity gets realized. So just hope that some of the items we've talked about today will help our clients to maximize the value of their Cisco EAs and minimize some of those risks.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. This has, as I anticipated, been a really useful podcast. And I'd like to point out to you, the listening audience, that Ben and Mark recently wrote a comprehensive article for Network World on negotiating a Cisco EA. So if you'd like a copy of that document, or you want to discuss your Cisco EA or any other ICT needs that you might have with LB3 or TC2, please shoot us an email or give us a call. You can also stay current by checking out our websites or follow us on LinkedIn.